Welcome into a daily editorial here on the KE Report. We are recording some daily editorials on this Thanksgiving Day down in the U.S., so we want to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving. I hope everybody is getting some time to watch some football and have some great meals. It was always one of my favorite times when I went to school down in the U.S. I am chatting with Eric Wettering. He is the founder and editor of The Hedgeless Horseman. Now, Eric, you and I were talking off mic again about kind of how slow this market is and the lack of news. There was actually some news that came out this week when it came to majors taking companies over and even divesting products. But what I want to talk to you about is how you navigate some of these public forums that are focused on resource companies. It's one of the unique aspects of this industry, especially when it comes to small companies, is that there are a couple sites that it seems like a lot of active investors, pretty much all the active investors, go to and share some ideas, sometimes with newsletter writer input, and sometimes, unfortunately, with some of the more promotional, almost pumpers, getting involved in the conversation. But you go to these forums all the time. Can you share some of your insights first and foremost as to why you go to these forums, what you use them for when you're analyzing a company?
Sure. First of all, there's a lot of smart people out there. And I mean, I see that as an asset because there are some smart people who go to these forums and are willing to share, I mean, insights on mining and geology and stuff that I don't know much about. And I appreciate that. And that is one, way to get some value out of the forums. And but I mean, my main reason for going to the forums is just I love discussing things with people and sharing insights and, brainstorming ideas and whatever. And I mean, like for some rooms, take Novo, for example. I mean, there's a bunch of smart people from different businesses with different backgrounds that all have some input to say. And at the same time, you got to be aware, in my opinion, of the ones that, you know, have an obvious agenda. I mean, most of us or all of us are biased. Like if I have a big position, of course, I'm going to be interpreting things more bullish than they might be, etc. But as long as people are actually, you know, quite honest and stuff, and what I especially try to do is, like, I don't just put something out there, I try to explain why I think in a certain way, so people could, you know, if I'm wrong, they can dissect my arguments. But you see some people just throw out absolutes and don't explain their, you know, the reason for these absolutes, like this will never work or this is going to be this big or whatever. And the funny thing is, like, sometimes I get criticized for using a lot of ifs, that, okay, if this happened and this happened and this happens, then this would happen. It's like when I just try to explain my my blue sky case or whatever, and I get criticized for that. But I think it would be dishonest to say that or to not use ifs, because I can't guarantee anything. None can guarantee anything. I mean, everything can take a turn for the worse or the better. So, I mean, you have to, I constantly upgrade or update my estimates or my assumptions and stuff like that. But that's still what I don't see that as being, you know, I don't know, a negative. Because, I mean, if we're pricing in, let's say, 5% of a blue sky case, then it's obvious that there's a lot of ifs that need to come to fruition to finally reach that blue sky case. But when you see people just say, this will never work, or this is going to zero, and they just throw a one-liner out or something like that, I mean, then you know they have an agenda. I don't know if they're traders or something more sinister than that. But, I mean, it's as much as important to know who you could at least trust somewhat to as important as figuring out who you should really not trust. Because, I mean, there are a lot of book talking traders that when it's up, if they're not in the stock, they'll be bashing it all day. If they're in the stock and wants to get out, they'll be pumping it all day. And then they go back to just reversing, basically, when the share price has reversed. I mean, you just look up people's posting history, and you can see who are congruent or who are basically just hyperbolic in one way or another.
Yeah, you know what? There's a lot to unpack in these forums because you're right. A lot, almost all of these people do carry biases when it comes to certain stocks. And one of the good things about the forums is that you can follow along with some of the people's comments, but it's actually not that easy to do if you're not active all the time. That's one problem that I have with a lot of those forums is that if you're just hopping from company to company, reading some of the short-term comments, you really don't get a full feeling of exactly what companies or exactly what some of these individuals carry in terms of a bias. But I use these forums periodically for a couple of things. One, to see how many people are talking about a company. Sometimes there just isn't any chatter going. That's obviously not a great sign because it means not a whole lot of people are either paying attention or even more so really invested in a company and their news flow. And then sometimes there are just a couple people going back and forth, which that's not the worst case scenario if they are sharing some ideas. But then in some other cases, kind of like Novo, there can be a lot of people that are chatting about a story and giving a bunch of mixed opinions and mixed reviews. When you go on and read up on companies, whether it's Novo or any other company that you hold, how important is it for you to see a certain number of people talking? Can you share some of your thoughts there?
That's a good question. I mean, as you say, I've tried to dabble in a few companies that look really cheap, but no one cares. And I mean, if they can still be cheap and people can continue not to care. And in that case, I mean, in terms of share price, there isn't much happening. So, I mean, that's a negative. But at the same time, if you're willing to look for the really unloved or unknown cases, I mean, then you could expect that there will be a low amount of posts in those rooms. So I'm not really that afraid of that, except that it can, you know, go much further down and become even more undervalued. And the problem in this kind of market, I mean, every junior that isn't producing needs to raise money sometime. So it can quickly go into a downward spiral that even if you're right in the end, they will have diluted away a lot of your shares. So, I mean, that's a big problem. At the same time, it's like if there's a really hyped up story and you see post after post and it's blue sky and blue sky. I mean, the latest example would be Great Bear. There were some interesting comments in that room, and you just knew that, okay, this, I mean, the sentiment is beyond frothy. It's beyond frothy. And I'm not saying that the things that some of these people wrote won't pan out. It's just that I know from experience with Novo that, okay, a lot of things takes much longer than people believe. And as soon as there comes a lull or the reality sets in that, okay, it takes some time to prove up the blue sky scenario, even if the blue sky scenario is intact. I mean, it's just going to get crushed for a period of time. And in that case, you could go in even lower because, as is often the case, it will overshoot and then undershoot. And I mean, there's a bunch of, in my opinion, good stories out there still that had a big run up, but then they got crushed due to, you know, a swinging sentiment and gold and all that stuff, but who actually went from overvalued to undervalued. But people, you know, once bitten, twice shy. And I think that's the case for a lot of juniors. And some people who just sell out of a story and get disgusted with it, they're not quick to get back in, even though sentiment improves or fundamentals improve. And I think that's the case, for example, for Novo, that the share price was basically immune to any news for the last 6 months. They just kept on racking up good news items and nobody cared. And for me, I've been buying and buying and buying for like 6 months. So I have much more shares now than I had in 2017, but no one was left for dead. And if you weren't following the story basically every day and reading all the discussions and listening to every interviews, including when you interviewed Quinton, I mean, you would have no idea that the fundamentals would have dislodged itself in such a way with the share price, because share price was telling you that nothing is happening, nothing has changed. But if you read the news items, etc., with like ore sorting, you're realizing that things are changing quickly, but sentiment isn't.
Well, unfortunately, too, some of these news events just aren't as exciting for the market, right? The market wants a new discovery every day or every week from a company, and a new, even higher grade drill hole than recent ones that they release. So that's kind of the tough balance with exploration companies and just how finicky the market is right now. But one thing you've mentioned quite a bit here is the blue sky potential. And I think that's very important to dive into because there's a balance here. One, companies need blue sky. That's what gets investors excited. That's even what gets majors involved in companies. It's not for current resources. It's for the blue sky, where the growth can come from. So if you're a company and you don't have that blue sky, at least built into some investors' minds, then you're facing two problems. One, what's the impetus to buy your shares up even ahead of news rather than actually producing some really solid news, which is hard to do on a consistent basis? And how do you get that blue sky in people's minds? Because sometimes if you hear of companies saying the blue sky at this project is going to be 2 million ounces, that's not as exciting to a major as 10 million or 20 million, something that almost Great Bear is dealing with, where people are saying this thing could be absolutely huge, and that's what gets people excited. How do you balance out blue sky? It's good for companies to have that built into shareholders' minds, but there's also a certain level where you actually need it to be almost extreme in a sense to validate some of the, well, big moves that investors want in these companies.
I mean, that's a good point. And I mean, honestly, there aren't a lot of juniors out there with projects that are, you know, on the obscene end of the blue sky spectrum. And that's a problem. But you just have to look at the discoveries over the last 10, 20 years. I mean, they've been going downhill. They've been going downhill for decades. I mean, it's just, I guess it's a sign of the times that the blue skies of a few decades ago, I mean, those are truly, truly unique today. And I mean, that's what gets people excited about, like Great Bear, for example. Okay, this could be one of those really big mines, but at the same time, it's the ones that I also like to invest in. I'm not personally invested in Great Bear, but it's a great example of that. If you find some companies with blue sky being really, really huge beyond, you know, 99% of all the other juniors, I mean, you don't even need blue sky to pan out in that case, because let's say Great Bear doesn't have 10 to 20 million ounces. Maybe they have 5. That could still be a great mine that would fetch a great price. And that's also why I'm really, you know, bullish on Irving and Lion One, for example, and of course Novo, because their blue skies are way up there. And even if they just, you know, I don't know, if let's say they reach 50% of the true blue sky, I mean, that's still very, very good. But if you're holding juniors that have a blue sky of, I don't know, 2 million ounces or whatever, I mean, who knows if they will even get built if they reach blue sky. And in that case, it doesn't matter basically what happens, because it will be worthless. So I just try to basically aim for the stars and be happy to hit the moon. And I think that gives me a margin of safety, basically, that I don't need to be right. I don't need to the true blue sky to materialize, because I would get rewarded anyway. So I see that as having a very expensive upside creates the situation that, okay, even if you get 50% of that blue sky, I mean, you will come out ahead of most juniors, at least. And yeah, basically that I think, and I especially love the ones that have something proven up already and have blue sky. And honestly, I mean, I think they are still very much undervalued relative to all the dog shit out there that's have a 1% chance of finding anything that would be worth anything. And they're, as I said, I mean, the blue sky for them might be 2-3 million ounces, and then everything there's got to be a lot of factors that play into it to make it, to have it become a mine. Because if it's way out in Yukon or whatever, I mean, you might need, I don't know, 4 million, 5 million, 6 million ounces. But if you get the infrastructure and stuff with you and you have a broad spectrum in terms of blue sky, I mean, it doesn't matter if the share price is pricing in 5% of the blue sky and people saying, oh, that's too optimistic or whatever. What does it matter? It's not pricing it in. So you're not taking direct risk anyway. And so that's one thing that I think people need to be aware of what's important and not important. And if there are some really bullish people out there, sure, I mean, they might be wrong. But I mean, if it's not pricing in what they say anyway, then it doesn't matter. I mean, you have to come to your own conclusions. What's priced in here and what is the upside? Okay, let's say it reaches 50% of blue sky. Is the current share price and market valuation, does it warrant that kind of, you know, upside scenario, even if it just ends up being half of what you ideally would want to see?
All right, Eric, we're going to wrap it up there. There's kind of a lot to talk about when it comes to some of these forums. I know a lot of people hate on the forums, but also a lot of people use the forums to get some up-to-date information. And as I said, I use the forums as more or less a barometer as to who's paying attention and just how extreme some of the comments can get. Trying to get maybe a level-headed approach when I interview companies to bring everybody back to some sort of a reality. I do want to hear from everybody on our site. That's also another way that I gauge interest on certain companies, is by the emails and comments that we get. A lot of the emails I find very interesting and help me focus some of my questions. But please, everybody, if you have time today, if you're stepping away from your Thanksgiving meal, share with us what you use the forums for, what you like about them, and what you dislike about them. And hey, maybe we can get a little conversation going here. But hey, Eric, great chatting with you. I'm going to post a link to your website below this interview so everyone can keep up to date on what you're investing in and what you're paying attention to for certain companies. Eric, thanks for your time today.
Thanks, Corey.